Brideshead Revisited by Evelyn Waugh, adapted for radio by Jeremy Front, with Ben Miles as Charles, Jamie Bamber as Sebastian, and Benjamin Whitrow as Mr. Ryder. Episode 1.
We were leaving that day. When we marched in, 3 months before, the place was under snow. Now the first leaves of spring were unfolding, and I reflected that whatever scenes of desolation lay ahead of us, I never feared one more brutal than this. Here love had died between me and the army, and here at the age of 39, I began to be old.
Come in. Hooper, where the devil have you been?
Am I late? Sorry.
Hooper had no illusions about the army. He had come to it reluctantly, under compulsion, after he had made every feeble effort in his power to obtain deferment. He accepted it, he said, like the measles.
I told you to inspect the lines.
I had a rush getting my stuff together.
That's what you have a servant for.
Well, I suppose it is, strictly speaking. But you know how it is. He had his own stuff to do. And if you get on the wrong side of these fellas, they take it out of you otherwise.
We're going to inspect the lines now.
Righty-o.
For Christ's sake, don't say righty-o.
Sorry. I do try to remember. It just slips out.
Well, don't let it.
I say, any idea where we're off to?
None.
Do you think it's the real thing?
I doubt it.
Just a flap?
Probably.
Everyone's been saying we're for it. I don't know what to think, really. Seems so silly somehow, all this drill and training, if we never go into action.
Well, I shouldn't worry, Hooper. There'll be plenty for everyone in time.
Oh, I don't want much, you know. Just enough to say I've been in it.
Well, the sooner you go and inspect the lines, the sooner we'll all be out of here. Go on, then. What are you waiting for?
Righty-o. Oh, sorry.
On this morning of our move, I was entirely indifferent as to our destination. Our orders were to entrain at 09:15 hours at a nearby siding. That was all I needed to know. There had been many such moves since the wildly exhilarating morning in 1940, when we had erroneously believed ourselves destined for the defense of Calais.
Ryder, this is an order group.
Sir.
I expect you to attend properly dressed.
Sit down. Thank you, sir.
The camp was left in a disgraceful condition. I do not intend to have my professional reputation compromised by the slackness of a few temporary officers. Understood?
Sir.
Right. End of lecture. Orders. The train will arrive at destination at approximately 23:15 hours. Information. Battalion is now in transit between location A and location B.
Hooper!
Oh, hello. Just arrived?
Yes.
Filthy night.
Yes, where are the men?
I've sent them off to get cleaned up.
Good. Any idea where we are?
The house is up there, round the corner. You can't miss it. Great barrack of a place. I've just had a snoop round. Very ornate. And there's a sort of Roman Catholic church attached. There was a kind of service going on. Just a padre and one old man. I felt very awkward.
More in your line than mine.
Odd name, too. Brideshead Castle.
Brideshead. It was as though someone had switched off the wireless, and a voice that had been bawling in my ears incessantly had been suddenly cut short.
Oops!
Whose car is this, Sebastian?
A man called Hardcastle. Return the bits to him if I kill myself. I'm not very good at driving.
Brideshead. I had been there first with Sebastian more than 20 years ago on a cloudless day in June.
Well?
What a place to live in.
It's where my family live. Don't worry, they're all away. You won't have to meet them.
But I should like to.
Well, you can't. They're all in London. You must see the garden from the front.
20 years since my first brief visit. Could I have known then that it would one day be remembered with tears by a middle-aged captain of infantry? I had just gone up to Oxford. Within days of my arrival, my cousin Jasper paid me a visit.
You're reading history, yes?
Yes.
A perfectly respectable school. The very worst is English literature. The next is modern greats. What sort of degree do you intend to get?
Well, I hadn't...
You want either a first or a fourth. There's no value in anything in between. Clothes, dress as you do in a country house. Never wear a tweed coat and flannel trousers. Always a suit. Clubs?
I was thinking of joining the union.
Run for the union if you want, but make your reputation outside first. Don't treat the dons like schoolmasters. Treat them as you would the vicar at home. You'll find you spend half his second year shaking off the undesirable friends you made in your first. Oh, and beware the Anglo-Catholics. They're all sodomites with unpleasant accents. In fact, steer clear of all the religious groups. They do nothing but harm. Time I was going. Thanks for the tea and all. Oh, and one last thing, Charles. Change your rooms.
But I rather like them.
Yes, I dare say. But I've seen many a man ruined through having ground floor rooms in the front quad. People start dropping in, you start giving them sherry, and before you know where you are, you've opened a free bar for all the undesirables of the college.
I do not know that I ever consciously followed any of this advice, and I certainly never changed my rooms. My earliest friends, a small circle of college intellectuals, provided the kind of company I had enjoyed in the sixth form at school. But I felt at heart that this was not all which Oxford had to offer. One evening in March, shortly before midnight...
...or what we might, for the sake of argument, call narrative element.
Mind if I open a window? It's rather stuffy in here.
Oh, yes. Volume is the thing. If you allow Cézanne to represent a third dimension on his two-dimensional canvas, then you must allow Lanzier his gleam of loyalty in the spaniel's eye.
Yes, yes. I can quite see the point you're making, however...
Oh... Hello.
Hello.
What a charming room. Come on, Sebastian. Do you know, I feel most unaccountably unwell.
Oh, good God.
On behalf of my friend, please accept my apologies.
That's disgusting.
The wines were too various, you see. It was neither the quality nor the quantity that was at... it was the mixture.
Oh, my head.
To understand all is to forgive.
I'm sorry, but it actually wasn't quite
couldn't
as it appears.
Couldn't even get to a window.
You see, the thing
those
is...
Those that can't keep it down are better without it.
Yes, but it wasn't one of my party lights.
Well, it's just as nasty clearing it up, whoever it was.
There's 5 shillings on the sideboard.
Yes, so I saw, and thank you. But I'd rather not have the money and not have the mess any morning.
Yes. Yes, I can quite see. Sorry.
Morning, sir. Oh. Flowers for Mr. Ryder.
Good Lord. Looks like the entire stock of a market stall.
It is, sir. Here, there's a note.
Thank you. I am very contrite. Aloysius won't speak to me until he sees I am forgiven, so please come to luncheon today. Sebastian Flight.
Lord Marchmain's youngest son.
Yes, it was he who vomited on my floor last night.
Oh, was it now? A most amusing young gentleman. I'm sure it's quite a pleasure to clean up after him. I take it you're lunching out, sir.
A tiny, priggish, warning voice in my ear told me it was seemly to hold back. But I was in search of love in those days.
Yes, Lunt. Lunching out.
Come in! 33, 34...
Hello.
35, 36... I'm so sorry, I was just counting the plovers' eggs. There are enough for 5 each. With 1 left over. Which I shall eat now. I'm unaccountably hungry today. Would you care for a dry martini?
Yes, thank you.
Can't apologise enough for my deplorable behaviour last night.
Thank you for the flowers.
Aloysius thought it would be a good idea. There you are.
Thanks.
Do you know that beast Hobson has put him next door? Although perhaps it's as well, as there wouldn't have been enough eggs for him.
I'm sorry, who is Aloysius?
My bear.
Bear?
Oh, I'll bring him in, whether Hobson likes it or not. There you are, Aloysius. You can sit there.
A teddy bear.
He's got pride of place. Come in.
Sebastian.
Hello, chaps.
The party assembled. Three Etonian freshmen, mild, elegant, detached young men who had all been to a dance in London the night before and spoke of it as if it had been the funeral of a near but unloved kinsman.
Mmm, plover's eggs.
Where do you get them, Sebastian?
Mummy sends them from Brideshead. They always lay early for her. They're delicious, don't you think, Charles?
Yes, very good.
And who was at Margot's last night?
The usual crowd. Alistair Trumpington, Sir Humphrey Maltravers.
David Lennox was there, you know, the photographer.
Oh, yes.
My dears, I couldn't get away before. I shall never forgive my preposterous tutor. As it was, he thought it very odd my leaving when I did, but I told him I had to change for footer.
You know everyone, I think, apart from Charles. Charles Ryder, Anthony Blanche.
Charmed. I hear Sebastian rather disgraced himself last night.
Do shut up, Antoine.
It was nothing.
I do hope he didn't sully any precious rugs or exquisite fabrics. You should be chastised, Sebastian, if I had my way most severely.
Blanche, a byword for iniquity, had been pointed out to me often in the streets as he pranced along with his high peacock tread. After luncheon, he stood on the balcony with a megaphone and in languishing tones recited lines from the wasteland.
Suffered all enacted on this same divan bed. I, who have sat by Thebes below the wall.
Do come in, Antoine.
Walked among the lowest of the dead. Thank you for your attention, dear boy. I am surprised. All boatmen are grace darlings to me. Now, I fear I must leave you, gentlemen, for other and less delightful company. Sebastian, mwah, mwah, a delight as ever. I should like to stick you full of barbed arrows like a pin cushion.
Sweet of you.
As for you, Charles, I think it's perfectly brilliant of Sebastian to have discovered you. Where do you lurk? I shall come down to your burrow and chivvy you out like an old stoat. Now, I must away. Farewell, my friends.
The others left soon after him, and I too rose to go. But Sebastian insisted I stay for some more Cointreau. Then a little later said,
I must go to the Botanical Gardens.
Why?
To see the ivy.
I've never been to the Botanical Gardens.
Oh, Charles, what a lot you have to learn. There's a beautiful arch there and more different kinds of ivy than I knew existed. I don't know where I should be without the Botanical Gardens.
That luncheon party was the beginning of a new epoch in my life and the beginning of my friendship with Sebastian. Thus it came about, one June morning in 1923, that our lives were to become forever entwined. It was 8th week in Oxford. My college was giving a ball, and no one felt more strongly about it than my scout, Lunt.
I must say, the whole of Oxford's become most peculiar suddenly.
I couldn't agree more, sir.
Last night, it was pullulating with women. You're to come away at once, Charles, out of danger.
I didn't realise we were in actual danger.
Definitely mortal danger, isn't that right, Lunt?
Well, I never had to buy pincushions for a lady's cloakroom before.
There you are, Charles, it's come to pincushions. I've got a motor car and a basket of strawberries and a bottle of Chateau Perrigue, which isn't a wine you've ever tasted, so don't pretend. It's heaven with strawberries.
Where are we going?
To see a friend.
Who?
Name of Hawkins!
Whose car is this?
Man called Hardcastle. Return the bits to him if I kill myself. I'm not very good at driving. Here, look after Aloysius. Take care he's not sick.
Look out!
Sorry!
Soon we were in open country. At about 11, and without warning, Sebastian turned the car into a cart track. Under a clump of elms, we ate the strawberries and drank the wine. We lit fat Turkish cigarettes and lay on our backs. Sebastian's eyes on the leaves above him, mine on his profile.
Just a place to bury a crock of gold. I should like to bury something precious in every place where I've been happy. And then when I was old and ugly and miserable, I could come back and dig it up and remember.
It's good to be away from Oxford.
God bless Hardcastle.
Whoever he may be.
He's a very gloomy man in my college who says he knows my father, which is impossible.
Why?
No one knows, Papa. He's a social leper. Hadn't you heard?
I knew nothing about Sebastian's family, but assumed from his tone that he was no closer to his father than I was to mine. Although I'd chosen to ignore Cousin Jasper, he had at least attempted to offer me some guidance. My father offered none. Indeed, it was not until I was within a fortnight of going up that he mentioned the subject at all.
Ah, I've been talking about you.
Oh, yes, Father.
As I met your future warden at the Athenaeum, I wanted to talk about Etruscan notions of immorality. He wanted to talk about extension lectures for the working class, so we compromised and talked about you.
I see.
I asked him what your allowance should be. He said 300 a year, on no account give him more.
Did he say why?
Apparently that's what most men have. I thought that a deplorable answer. I had more than most men when I was up, and my recollection is that nowhere else in the world and at no other time do a few hundred pounds make so much difference to one's importance and popularity.
Did you say that to him?
No. I toyed with the idea of giving you 600, but I reflected that should the warden come to hear of it, it might sound deliberately impolite.
Yes, I suppose it might.
So I shall give you 550.
Oh.
Yes, it's indulgent of me. But it all comes out of capital, you know.
I didn't, but, well, thank you. Thank you very much.
I suppose this is the time I should give you advice.
I suppose.
I never had any myself, except once, in the summer, before I went up from your cousin Alfred. He rode over to Boughton especially to give me a piece of advice, and... Do you know what that advice was? Ned, he said, there is one thing I must beg of you. Always wear a tall hat on Sundays during term. It is by that, more than anything, that a man is judged. And do you know, I always did.
And were you?
Was I what?
Judged by it.
Oh, no idea. Some men wore them, some didn't. I never saw the difference between them, or heard it commented on. But I always wore mine. It only shows what effect judicious advice can have, delivered at the right moment.
Yes.
I wish I had some for you, but I haven't.
After lunching at an inn, Sebastian and I drove on and in the early afternoon came to our destination.
Well?
What a place to live in.
It's where my family live.
Not that is my house, but it's where my family live.
Don't worry, they're all away. You won't have to meet them.
But I should like to.
Well, you can't. They're all in London. You must see the garden from the front. Everything's shut up. We'd better go in this way.
So don't buy Indigo Jones. It looks later.
Oh, Charles, don't be such a tourist. What does it matter when it was built, if it's pretty?
It's the sort of thing I like to know.
Oh, dear. I'm going to have to cure you of all that. Come on. Through here.
Come in.
Hello, Nanny.
Well, this is a surprise. Oh, who's this? Oh, I don't think I know him.
This is Charles. Charles, this is Nanny Hawkins.
How do you do?
Hello. Oh, what a lovely surprise. It's so dull without them all, just Mrs. Chandler and two of the girls and old Bert. And then they're all going on holidays, and the boiler's being done out in August, and you're going to see his lordship in Italy. It'll be October before we're settled down again. You've come just at the right time, though. Julia's here for the day.
Julia's here.
Yes, dear. It's the conservative women. Her ladyship was to have done them, but she's poorly. Julia won't be long. She's leaving immediately after her speech, before the tea.
I'm afraid we may miss her again.
Don't do that, dear. It'll be such a surprise to her seeing you. Though she ought to wait for tea. I told her it's what the conservative women come for. Now, what's the news? Are you studying hard at your books?
Not very, I'm afraid, Nanny.
Oh, cricketing all day long, I expect, like your brother.
Well,
I... He found time to study too, though. He's not been here since Christmas, but he'll be here for the agricultural, I expect.
I expect he will.
Did you see this piece about Julia in the paper?
No, what's all this?
Here we are. The lovely daughter whom Lady Marchmain is bringing out this season. Witty as well as ornamental, the most popular debutante. Well, that's no more than the truth. Though it was a shame to cut her hair. I said to Father Phipps, it's not natural. He said, nuns do it. Well, surely, Father, I said, surely you aren't going to make a nun out of Lady Julia. The very idea. Oh, ring the bell, dear, and we'll have some tea.
I'm afraid we're going to have to go, Nanny.
Oh, no. That is a pity.
We've only borrowed the motor car for the afternoon.
And Miss Julia, she will be upset when she hears.
Poor Nanny. She does have such a dull life. I've a good mind to bring her to Oxford to live with me. Only she'd always be trying to send me to church. Hurry up, Charles. We must go quickly before my sister gets back.
Which are you ashamed of? Where will be?
I'm ashamed of myself. Anyway, I'm not going to have you get mixed up with my family. They're so madly charming. All my life, they've been taking things away from me. If they once get hold of you, they'd make you their friend, and not mine. And I won't let them.
All right, but at least let me see more of the house.
It's all shut up. On Queen Alexandra's Day, it's open for a shilling.
Sebastian!
Oh, very well. Come and look if you want to. All the furniture's draped in sheets, I'm afraid. I could open one of the shutters if you like. Let some light into the gloom. There.
Good Lord. Is it all like this?
There are a few pretty things I'd like to show you one day. Not now. But there's the chapel. You must see that. Come! I'll show you. Why did you genuflect?
Because you did. Good manners, I suppose.
Well, you need it on my account. You wanted to do sightseeing? How about this? It's a monument of Art Nouveau.
The interior had been gutted and redecorated in the arts and crafts style. Angels in printed cotton smocks, rambler roses, flower-spangled meadows and saints in armour covered the walls in an intricate pattern of clear, bright colours.
It was Papa's wedding present to Mama. Now, if you've seen enough... I'm afraid I wasn't very nice this afternoon. Bride's head often has that effect on me. But I had to take you to see Nanny. Oh, that's Julia's car. We only just got away in time. What?
I didn't say anything.
You gave me a look. I don't keep asking you questions about your family.
Neither do I about yours.
You don't have to. The questions are there, hanging over us.
Well, you're so mysterious about them.
I hoped I was mysterious about everything.
Perhaps I'm rather curious about other people's families. It's not something I know much about. You see, there's only Father and myself. My mother was killed in the war.
Oh? How very unusual.
She went to Serbia with the Red Cross. My father's been rather odd in the head ever since.
Odd?
Yes, he just lives alone in London with no friends and footles about collecting things.
You don't know what you've been saved. There are lots of us. Look them up in Debrett.
Towards the end of that summer term, I received the last visit and grand remonstrance of my cousin Jasper.
My dear Charles, whether you realise it or not, you've gone hook, line and sinker into the very worst set in the university. And now I find that, thanks to you, I am becoming a figure of fun at the dining club.
I'm sorry to hear that, Jasper.
That chap Flight you seem inseparable from...
Sebastian?
Yes. He may be all right, I don't know. His brother Brideshead was a sound fellow... But this friend of yours looks odd to me, and he gets himself talked about. Of course, they're an odd family. The Marchmains have lived apart since the war.
And so Jasper gave me a history of the Marchmains.
As I say, Flight may be all right, but Anthony Blanche,
Now, there's a man there's absolutely no excuse for.
I don't particularly like him myself.
Well, he's always hanging around here. And the stiffer element in college don't like it. He was thrown into Mercury again last night. These types think that because they've got a lot of money to throw about, they can do anything. And that's another thing. All this stuff. What about these cigars and these frivolous-looking books? Or this decanter?
It's Lalique.
And this peculiarly noisome object?
With a look of particular disdain, he indicated a human skull, which, resting in a bowl of roses, formed the chief decoration of my table. It bore the motto, Et in Arcadia Ego, inscribed on its forehead.
It's purchased from the School of Medicine. I had to pay cash for it.
And you can't be doing any work. Not that that matters, if you're making something of a career elsewhere. But are you? Have you spoken to the union? Are you connected with any of the magazines? Are you even making a position in the Ouds?
Guilty as charged. No to all three.
And your clothes. Your present get-up seems an unhappy compromise between the correct wear for a theatrical party at Maidenhead and a glee singing competition in a garden suburb. And drink.
Oh, Jasper, please.
No one minds a man getting tight once or twice a term. But I hear you're constantly seen drunk in the middle of the afternoon.
Well, I'm sorry, Jasper. I know I must be embarrassing for you, but I happen to like this bad set. I like getting drunk at luncheon. And though I haven't yet spent quite double my allowance, I undoubtedly shall before the end of term. I usually have a glass of champagne about this time. Will you join me?
Looking back now, after 20 years, there is little I would have done otherwise. That summer term with Sebastian, it seemed as though I was being given a brief spell of what I'd never known, a happy childhood. On the day after Jasper's grand remonstrance, I received another, in different terms, from an unexpected source.
Charles, dear boy!
Anthony!
Have you dined?
No.
Good. I'm going to drag you away from the culinary delights of Formal Hall and feed you. Come along.
Where are we going, Anthony?
Tame. There is a delightful hotel there, which luckily doesn't appeal to the Bullingdon. I hope we shall find no undergraduates there. I'm a little out of sympathy with them at the moment.
I heard they put you in Mercury.
It was too naughty. Luckily, I was wearing my oldest pyjamas, and it was an evening of oppressive heat, or I might have been seriously cross. I tried to explain to the dear, sweet clodhoppers that if they knew anything of sexual psychology, they'd know that nothing would give me keener pleasure than to be manhandled by meaty boys. In fact, it would be an ecstasy of the very naughtiest kind. They're all oafs, and the biggest oaf of them all is Boy Mulcaster.
My evening with Anthony was a tour de force on his part, a dramatic monologue in three courses. But there was only one theme.
I can see Sebastian has completely captivated you, my dear Charles, and I'm not surprised. He has charm, such charm. You wouldn't believe it, but at school people used to say he was a little bitch. Everyone in pop liked him, of course, and all the masters. He never had spots, you know. Or did he have one? Rather a stubborn one at the back of his neck. I think now that he did. Narcissus with one pustule. How's your food?
Very good.
Shall we have another bottle of this wine or something different? Some bloody old Burgundy, eh? You see, Charles, I understand all your tastes. You must come to France with me and drink the wine. I want to introduce you to a lot of my friends. I've told Cocteau about you. He's all agog.
I can't imagine why.
Because behind that cold, English, phlegmatic exterior, you are an artist. Those little drawings you keep hidden away in your room, they are exquisite. You are not exquisite. I am. Sebastian, in a way, is. But the artist is an eternal type. Solid, purposeful, observant, and beneath it all, passionate, eh, Charles? Do you wish Sebastian was with us? Of course you do. Do I? I wonder. I forget if you know his family.
They were all away when we visited Brighton.
Oh, of course they were. I doubt he'll ever let you meet them. He's far too clever and they're quite, quite gruesome.
In what respect?
There's Brideshead, who's archaic, like something out of a cave that's been sealed for centuries. And Julia, whose photograph appears as regularly in the papers as advertisements for Beecham's pills. Oh, and there's another sister too, I believe, in the schoolroom.
But it's when one gets to the parents that a bottomless pit opens. How does Lady Marshmaine manage it? So very, very beautiful. A voice as quiet as a prayer and as powerful. She has destroyed her husband utterly.
How?
Oh, he went off to war, never came back, and formed a connection with a dancer. Lady Marchmain refuses to divorce him because she's so pious, and now he daren't show his big purple face anywhere. Sebastian sees him, but no one else goes near. So, you see, we mustn't blame Sebastian if at times he seems a little insipid. But then you don't blame him, do you, Charles? Tell me candidly, have you ever heard him say anything you have remembered for more than 5 minutes? Well, my dear, no doubt you'll trot round and tell him everything I've said about him, but it won't make the slightest difference to Sebastian's feeling for me. Shall I tell you what he'll do? He'll immediately start talking about that amusing bear of his.
The following morning, I walked down the broad to breakfast at a tea shop opposite Balliol, then made my way to Sebastian. He was out, so I read the letters that littered his writing table.
Charles!
Hello.
I've been to Mass at the old palace. I haven't been all this term, and Monseigneur Bell asked me to dinner twice last week, which means Mummy's been writing to him. So I sat bang in front and absolutely shouted the Hail Marys at the end. So, that's over. How was dinner with Antoine? What did you talk about?
He did most of the talking. Tell me, did you know him at Eton?
I remember seeing him about. He was sacked my first half.
Has he met any of your family?
No, I don't suppose so. Why all the interest?
I just wanted to find out how much truth there was in what Antony said last night.
I shouldn't think a word. That's his great charm.
You may think it charming. I think it devilish. Do you know, he spent the whole evening trying to turn me against you and almost succeeded.
Did he? How silly. Aloysius wouldn't approve of that at all, would you? You pompous old bear.
I returned home for the long vacation without plans and without money. Sebastian had disappeared into that other life of his where I was not asked to follow, and I was left forlorn and regretful.
Well, good evening, Father. Oh,
my dear boy, they never told me you were here. Did you have a very exhausting journey?
It wasn't too bad.
They gave you tea?
Yes.
Ah. You are well?
Yes, thank you, Father, I'm quite well.
I've just made a somewhat audacious purchase from Sonnenschein's. A terracotta bull of the 5th century. I was examining it and I forgot your arrival.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Dinner is served.
Oh, come along, Charles. You can tell me everything over dinner. What would you like to drink, Charles? Hater, what have we for Mr. Charles to drink?
Some whiskey.
Well, there you are, Charles's whiskey. Perhaps you'd like something else. What else have we?
There isn't anything else in the house.
Well, there's nothing else, Charles. You must tell Hater what you want and then get it in. I never keep any wine in now. I'm forbidden it and no one comes to see me. Yeah. But while you're here, you must have what you like. You're here for long?
I'm not quite sure, Father.
It's a very long vacation. In my day, we used to go on what was called reading parties. Always in the mountainous areas. Why should alpine scenery be thought conducive to study?
I thought of putting in some time at an art school in the life class.
Oh, my dear boy, you'll find them all shut. The students go to Barbizon or such places and paint in the open air. There was an institution in my day called a sketching club. Mixed sexes, pepper and salt knickerbockers, and, it was popularly thought, free love. Why, I expect they still go on.
One of the problems of the vacation is money, Father.
Oh, well, I shouldn't worry about a thing like that at your age.
Yes, but you see, I've run rather short. In fact, I don't quite know how I'm going to get through the next 2 months.
Oh, well, I'm the worst person to come to for advice. Yeah, I've never been short, as you so painfully call it. Now, your cousin Melcher was imprudent with his investments and got into a very queer street. He went to Australia.
But, Father, you surely don't want me to spend the whole vacation here with you. I mean, won't you find it rather a bore having me at home for so long?
I trust I should not betray such an emotion, even if I felt it. No, you're very welcome, my dear boy. Stay as long as you find it convenient.
During the sultry week that followed, relations with my father deteriorated sharply. I saw little of him during the day. If we met in a passage or on the stairs, he would look at me vacantly and say,
"Aha!"
or
"Very warm!"
or
"Splendid! Splendid!"
On the second evening, I took my book with me to the dining room.
"I do think, Charles, you might talk to me. I've had a very exhausting day. I'm looking forward to a little conversation."
"Of course, Father." "What shall we talk about?"
"Cheer me up. Take me out of myself. Tell me all about the new plays."
"But I haven't been to any."
"Oh, you should, you know. You really should. It's not natural for a young man to spend all his evenings at home."
"Well, Father, as I told you, I haven't much money to spare for theatre going."
"My dear boy, you must not let money become your master in this way. If you read the lives of eminent men, you will find that quite half of them made their first acquaintance with drama from the gallery. I'm told there's no pleasure like it. It's called sitting with the gods. The expense is nugatory, and even while you wait for admission in the street, you are diverted by buskers."
Next day, by chance, I met an old school acquaintance named Jorkins. I never had much liking for Jorkins, but now greeted him with enthusiasm and asked him to dinner. My father made a little fantasy for himself that Jorkins should be an American.
"It's so nice of you to come all this way."
"Oh, it wasn't very far. I live just on the other side of the..."
"Science annihilates distance. You're over here on business?"
"I'm in business, if that's what you mean."
"I had a cousin who was in business. I was telling Charles about him only the other night. He came a cropper." "You find his misfortunes the subject of mirth?"
No.
"Perhaps the word I used is unfamiliar. You no doubt would say fold it up. Does business consume all your time?"
"Oh, no. When I started out in my present line, I resolved to get out of the city as often as possible, you know, blow away the cobwebs."
"What do you do to blow them away?"
"I very much enjoy hiking, as it happens."
"Oh. Do you find the English countryside rather tame?"
"Tame?"
"Well, in comparison to the vast spaces to which you are accustomed."
"I'm sorry, I don't..."
"And I'm afraid that living in London, you must miss your national game."
"My national game?"
"Cricket."
"Some more wine, Jorkins."
A few days later, my father gave a little dinner party. It was a gruesome evening.
"Goodbye, goodbye. Thank you so much."
"Goodbye. Thank you. Bye-bye." "Ah, what very dull friends I have. You know, without the spur of your presence, I should never rouse myself to invite them. But now you're paying me such a long visit, I'll have many such evenings. You liked Miss Gloria Ormerick?"
"No."
"No? Was it her little moustache you objected to? Or her very large feet?"
My father never declared his war aims, and I do not to this day know whether they were plainly punitive or whether he fought for the sheer love of a battle in which he shone. Then, one Sunday afternoon, a telegram of alarming brevity came from Sebastian.
"Ah, Charles, you'll never guess how I have spent the day. I've been to the zoo. Yeah, it was most agreeable. The animals seem to enjoy the sun so much."
"Father, I must leave at once. A great friend of mine, he's had a terrible accident. A telegram arrived while you were out."
"Gravely injured. Come at once. Sebastian."
"Hater's packing for me now. There's a train in half an hour."
"Oh, I'm sorry you're upset. I shouldn't say the accident was as serious as you think. Otherwise, the message would hardly be signed by the victim himself. Still, he may well be fully conscious, but blind. Or paralyzed with a broken back. Why exactly is your presence so necessary? You have no medical knowledge. You're not in holy orders. Do you hope for a legacy?"
"I told you, he's a great friend."
"Oh, well, Ormerick is a great friend of mine, but I shouldn't go tearing off to his deathbed on a warm Sunday afternoon. I should doubt whether Lady Ormerick would welcome me. However, I see you have no such doubts. I shall miss you, my dear boy, but don't hurry back on my account."
bright landscape rolled past the windows, but fear worked like yeast in my thoughts. Images of disaster, a loaded gun held carelessly at a stile, a horse rearing and rolling over, a car at a blind corner. And the throb of the wheels repeated monotonously in my ears. You've come too late, you've come too late. He's dead, he's dead, he's dead.
Hello? Mr. Ryder?
Yes.
Julia, Sebastian's sister.
Oh.
Jump in.
How is Sebastian?
Oh, he's fine. Have you had dinner?
Yes, on the train.
Oh, I expect it was beastly. There's some more at home. Sebastian and I are alone, so we thought we'd make for you.
Thank you. What's happened to him?
Didn't he say?
No.
I expect he thought you wouldn't come if you knew. He's cracked a bone in his ankle so small that it hasn't even got a name. They x-rayed it yesterday, told him to keep it up for a month. He's been making the most enormous fuss.
I thought from his telegram he must be dying.
He tried to make me stay back with him, but I almost gave in. Then I said, surely there must be someone you can get hold of. And he said everybody was away or busy, and anyway, no one else would do. But at last he agreed to try you. So you can imagine how popular you are with me. I must say it's noble of you to come all this way at a moment's notice.
How did he do it?
Playing croquet. He lost his temper and tripped over a hoop. Not a very honourable scar. There are some cigarettes in the locker.
No, thanks.
Light one for me, will you?
Oh, yes, of course.
As I took the cigarette from my lips and put it in hers, I caught a thin bat squeak of sexuality, inaudible to anyone but me.
Here you are, darling. I've collected your chum.
I thought you were dying.
I thought I was too. The pain was excruciating. Julia, do you think if you asked him, Wilcox would give us champagne tonight?
Oh, I hate champagne, and Mr. Ryder has had dinner.
Mr. Ryder? Mr. Ryder? Charles drinks champagne at all hours. Come on, Charles. Wheel me through to the painted parlour.
It was a spacious, domed octagon, later in design than the rest of the house. While they dined, I ate a peach and told them of the war with my father.
Sounds a perfect poppet.
It's not the adjective I'd have chosen.
And now, I'm going to leave you, boys.
Where are you going?
The nursery. I promised Nanny a last game of Hulmer. Sweet dream, Sebastian. Good night, Mr. Ryder. And goodbye. I don't suppose we'll meet tomorrow. I'm leaving early. I can't tell you how grateful I am to you for relieving me at the sickbed.
Good night. My sister's very pompous tonight.
I don't think she cares for me.
I don't think she cares for anyone much. I love her. She's so like me.
Is she?
In looks, I mean, in the way she talks. I wouldn't love anyone with a character like mine. Pour us both some more port, will you?
Well, here's to your ankle.
We'll have a heavenly time alone.
Why is this house called a castle?
It used to be until they moved it.
Moved it?
We used to have a castle a mile away down by the village. Then we took a fancy to the valley. Pulled the castle down, carted the stones up here and built a new house. I'm glad they did, aren't you?
If it was mine, I'd never live anywhere else.
If it could only be like this always. Always summer. Always alone. The fruit always ripe. And Aloysius in a good temper.
It is thus I like to remember Sebastian, as he was that summer, when we wandered alone together through that enchanted place. It was an aesthetic education to live within those walls, to wander from room to room, from the Soanes-esque library to the Chinese drawing room, the Pompeian parlour to the great tapestry-hung hall. This was my conversion to the Baroque.
Let's have a look. Charles, that's really rather good.
Thank you. Shall I give it to your mother?
Why, you don't know her.
Seems polite, I'm staying in her house.
Give it to Nanny.
Very well.
Here, I've got something for you.
Oil paints?
Mummy bought them a year or two ago, but she couldn't draw at all. And however bright the colours in the tube, by the time she mixed them up, they came out a kind of khaki. I think you should have a go.
I've never used oils.
You'll pick it up. You've got the knack. Come on, I want to show you something.
This room was once an office for estate business.
It must have been very pretty once.
That's why we should bring it back to life.
How?
With your oil paints.
Are you serious?
Never more so. The walls are your canvas.
And so, in the days that followed, I began a romantic landscape without figures, a summer scene of white cloud and blue distances. A few days later, Sebastian and I went down to the cellars with Wilcox.
A lot of old wine wants drinking up.
Do you hear that, Charles?
Yes.
We ought to have laid down the 18 and 20s. But her ladyship says to ask Lord Brideshead, and he says to ask his lordship in Venice, and his lordship says to ask the lawyers. That's how we get low.
How low are we?
Oh, there's only enough here for 10 years at the rate it's going. And how shall we be then?
Well, I think it's our duty to help drink up the old wine, don't you, Charles?
Oh, yes.
Good. We'll start tonight.
Which one's this?
I can't remember.
Oh, yes. Oh, this is a wise old wine.
A prophet in a cave. And this is a necklace of pearls on a white neck.
Like a swan.
Like the last unicorn. Ought we to be drunk every night?
Yes, I think so.
I think so too.
Sebastian's faith was an enigma to me, but not one which I felt particularly concerned to solve. I had no religion. I was taken to church as a child, but my father did not go except on family occasions, and then with derision. Almost daily since I had known Sebastian, some chance word in his conversation had reminded me that he was a Catholic, but I took it as a foible, like his teddy bear. We never discussed the matter, until one Sunday as we sat in the colonnade with the papers.
It's very difficult being a Catholic.
Does it make much difference to you?
Of course, all the time.
I can't say I've noticed it. You don't seem much more virtuous than me.
I'm very, very much wickeder. Who was it used to pray, "Oh God, make me good, but not yet"?
I don't know. You, I should think.
Yes, I do, every day. But it isn't that. Oh. Another naughty scoutmaster in the news of the world.
I suppose they try and make you believe an awful lot of nonsense, priest.
Is it nonsense? I wish it were. It sometimes sounds terribly sensible to me.
My dear Sebastian, you can't seriously believe it all.
Can't I?
Well, Christmas and the star and the three kings and the ox and the ass.
Oh, yes, I believe that. It's a lovely idea.
But you can't believe things because they're a lovely idea.
I do. That's how I believe.
And in prayers, do you think you could kneel down in front of a statue and say a few words and change the weather?
I don't expect you to understand.
Or that some saints are more influential than others and you must get hold of the right one to help you with the right problem.
Oh, yes. Don't you remember last term when I took Aloysius and left him behind, I don't know where? I prayed like mad to St. Anthony of Padua that morning, and immediately after lunch, there was Mr. Nichols at Canterbury Gate with Aloysius in his arms, saying I'd left him in his cab.
Well, if you can believe all that, and you don't want to be good, where's the difficulty about your religion?
If you can't see, you can't.
Well, where?
Oh, don't be a bore, Charles. I want to read about a woman in Hull who's been using an instrument.
You've started the subject. I'm just getting interested.
I'll never mention it again. 38 other cases were taken into consideration in sentencing her to 6 months. Golly.
But he did mention it again, some 10 days later, as we were lying on the roof of the house, sunbathing and watching the agricultural show in the park below.
Look, there's Brideshead.
Where?
Down there, by the sheep enclosure.
Pass the binoculars.
Queer fellow, my brother.
He looks normal enough.
If only you knew. He's the craziest of us all, only it doesn't come out. He's all twisted inside. He wanted to be a priest, you know.
I didn't.
I think he still does. It was awful for Mummy. She couldn't try and stop him, but of course it was the last thing she wanted.
Why?
The eldest son. And poor Papa. The church has been enough trouble to him without that happening. Finally, they persuaded Bridie to go to Oxford and think it over for 3 years. Now he's trying to make up his mind.
Has your father given up religion?
He had to, in a way.
He only took to it when he married Mummy. You must meet him. He's a very nice man.
Must have upset you all when your father went away.
Cordelia was too young. Mummy tried to explain it to the three eldest so that we wouldn't hate Papa. I was the only one who didn't. I believe she wishes I did. I'd be staying with him in Venice now if it wasn't for this foot. Why don't you come too? You'd like him.
As I tried to explain to my father, I'm stony broke.
So, you see, we're a mixed family, religiously. Brideshead and Cordelia are both fervent. He's miserable, she's bird-happy. Julia and I are half-heathen. I'm happy, I rather think she isn't. Mummy's popularly believed to be a saint and Papa is excommunicated. I wouldn't know which of them is happy. Anyhow, however you look at it, happiness doesn't seem to have much to do with it, and that's all I want. I wish I liked Catholics more.
Sebastian!
Good heavens. Sebastian. Sounds like Cordelia. Cover yourself up.
Where are you? There you are. I guessed you were here. You didn't know I was about, did you?
Go away, Cordelia.
Why?
We've got no clothes on.
I came down with Bridie and stopped to see Francis Xavier. He's my pig.
Say how do you do to Mr. Ryder.
Oh, sorry. How do you do?
Hello.
They're all getting pretty boozy down there, so I came away. I say, who's been painting the office?
Be careful what you say. It's Mr. Ryder.
But it's lovely. I say, did you really?
Yes.
Well, you are clever. Why don't you both dress and come down? There's no one about.
Bride is sure to bring the judges in.
No, he won't. He's very sour today. He didn't want me to have dinner with you, but I fixed that. Oh, come on.
I'm sorry to miss so much of your visit. You are being looked after properly.
Oh, yes.
I hope Sebastian is seeing to the wine. Wilcox is apt to be rather grudging when he is on his own.
He's treated us very liberally.
I'm delighted to hear it. You are fond of wine?
Very.
I wish I were. It's such a bond with other men. At Magdalen, I tried to get drunk more than once, but I did not enjoy it. Events like this afternoon's are a torment to me in consequence.
I like wine.
My sister's last report said that she was not only the worst girl in the school, but the worst there had ever been in the memory of the oldest nun.
That's because I refused to be an enfant de Marie. Reverend Mother said that if I didn't keep my room tidier, I couldn't be one. So I said, well, I won't be one. And I don't believe our Blessed Lady cares two hoots whether I put my gym shoes on the left or the right of my dancing shoes.
Our Lady cares about obedience.
Bridie, you mustn't be so pious. We've got an atheist with us.
Agnostic.
Really? Is there much of that at your college? There was a certain amount at Magdalen.
I really don't know. I was one long before I went to Oxford.
It's everywhere. You know the bishop wants to close our chapel.
Oh, he couldn't.
I don't think Mummy will let him.
We must have the Blessed Sacrament here. I like popping in at odd times. So does Mummy.
So do I. But there are so few of us. It'll have to go sooner or later. Perhaps after Mummy's time. The point is, whether it wouldn't be better to let it go now. You're an artist, Mr. Ryder. What do you think of it aesthetically? Is it good art?
I think it's beautiful.
Well, I don't quite know what you mean. It's a remarkable example of its period. Probably in 80 years it'll be greatly admired.
But surely it can't be good 20 years ago and good in 80 years' time and not good now.
Well, it may be good now. All I mean is that I don't happen to like it that much.
But is there a difference between liking a thing and thinking it good?
Bridie, don't be so Jesuitical.
But isn't that just the distinction you made about wine?
No. I like and think good the end to which wine is sometimes the means, the promotion of sympathy between man and man. But in my own case, it does not achieve that end. So I neither like it nor think it good for me.
Bridie, do stop.
I'm sorry. I thought it a rather interesting point.
Oh, I'm glad I went to Eton.
If you'll excuse us, I'm afraid I must take Sebastian away for half an hour. I've a lot of papers for Father to sign, and Sebastian must take them to Italy and explain them to him. It's time you were in bed, Cordelia.
Oh, I must digest first. I'm not used to gorging like this all night. I'll talk to Charles.
Charles? Charles? It's Mr. Ryder to you, child.
Sebastian.
Excuse me, shan't be long.
Are you really agnostic?
Does your family talk about religion all the time?
Not all the time. It's just a subject that comes up naturally, doesn't it?
Never has with me before.
Then perhaps you are an agnostic. I'll pray for you.
It's very kind of you.
I can't spare you a whole rosary, you know. Just a decade. I've got such a long list of people. I take them in order and they get a decade each about once a week.
I'm sure it's more than I deserve.
Oh, I've got harder cases than you. Lloyd George, and the Kaiser, and Olive Banks.
Who's Olive Banks?
She was bunked from the convent last term. Reverend Mother found something she'd been writing. Do you know, if you weren't an agnostic, I'd ask you for 5 shillings to buy a black goddaughter.
Nothing will surprise me about your religion.
It's a new thing a missionary priest started last term. You send 5 bob to some nuns in Africa, and then they christen a baby and name her after you. I've got 6 black Cordelias already. Isn't it lovely?
That night, I began to realise how little I really knew Sebastian. Next morning, Brideshead and Cordelia went away. Sebastian walked without a stick now and had forgotten his injury. The month that had started in leisurely fashion came swiftly to its end.
There you are.
I've been watching the men demolishing the tents. The grass is in a shocking state.
Oh, it'll grow back. It always does. I've been thinking.
Oh, yes.
Come with me to Venice.
I told you, no money.
We'll live on Papa when we get there.
Couldn't even afford the fare.
I've thought of that. The lawyers pay my fare, first class and sleeper. We can travel third class for that.
Are you serious?
Never more so.
And so we went. In the first of 4 episodes of Brideshead Revisited by Evelyn Waugh, adapted for radio by Jeremy Front, Charles Ryder was played by Ben Miles. Sebastian was Jamie Bamber, Mr. Ryder, Benjamin Whitrow, Julia, Anne-Marie Duff, and Brideshead, Toby Jones. Anthony Blanche was Geoffrey Stretfield, Boy Mulcaster, Tom Smith, Hooper, Andrew Wincott, and Jasper, Martin Hyder. Collins was Scott Brooksbank, Cordelia, Abby Ford, and Nanny Hawkins, Anne Beach. The music was composed by Neil Brand. The director was Marion Nancarrow.